But
if we do that, I'll just do something else, not to work with, but just, this is a diagram of the full Clochno stone. So,
thank you.
Yeah. C-L-O-C-H-N-O. L-O-C-L-O-C-H-N-O.
No, there's a crepe.
I know, but
thank you.
C-L-O-C-H. There you go. N-O. Clochno.
What are those in a stone?
Carved into a stone. It's a massive stone, right? So this is a massive stone. That's just, you saw a little bit of it. Yeah. So that picture is a little bit. Yeah, that's right. So if you think, see that scale there, that's 3 foot. And so if you,
wow,
it's a big stone.
It's a rock.
It's a big, bloody big rock. Is what it is.
Amazing that they haven't moved it.
Quite nice. It's really nice, actually. They've kept it where it is. They've covered it and kept it. I really like that they did that, because they could have decided to dig it up and shift it kind of thing in the museum. And I really like they didn't do that. I like that they protected it, and so they buried it. But I like that it is where it was. It's massive. Yep, it is. Right. So let me tell you about this. So I was having a conversation, a sort of internet conversation with Jeremy and David, who I talk with regularly, and about these topics, really. I mean, and you know, we have periods of time where we're both all busy, so we don't have contact at all, and we have these periods where we have kind of, you know, have dialogue with each other, and this is one of these dialogue times. And in the middle of the week when we were having this dialogue, I had a dream. And I dreamt that I was living in a house in Avebury that was simultaneously in Avebury and in America. And it was a big old house, and there was a big old kitchen. And in the middle of the kitchen was an absolutely massive stone. Where the kitchen table would be, there was a ginormous stone full of cup and ring marks and weird marks. And I was really kind of affected by it. So when I went to therapy that week, I kind of was telling my therapist about it, and kind of unusually he got me to draw it. I don't normally draw things in my therapy, but he said, well, why don't you draw it? I said, oh, well, I'll draw it. So I drew it. And then the day after therapy, I get an email from Jeremy emailing this image to me, which turns out to be the exact spit, not quite as my own images are, not a bit cruder, but is a stone of exactly the same shape and size as the one I dreamt about. So that kind of took me aback a bit, as you might imagine, because it's sort of and it was particularly interesting. So when I talk to Jeremy about it, we kind of Avery Stone Circle is one of the, because when he did the original she cards that we used, the stones that you find in it are, and he just went visiting stone circles in the UK and drew stones and there's one card that's, you know, the card The Moon Stairs, where you've got this stairs going off to go off into the moon. Well, he got the inspiration for that card while he was in Avebury. So it was a bit weird that I dreamt about being in Avebury and in America and then he sent me this, and I then started a whole series of dreams where these cup and ring marks kept coming. So one quite mundane dream, I'm having a shower and I'm looking down the floor and the ripples of the shower are forming these shapes. Or I'm having an ordinary dream. I'm walking around, and on a door there are these cup and ring marks. It was a bit freaky. Exactly. It was a bit sort of. It's exactly where I definitely hadn't been first in Close Encounters territory. Thinking, what the fuck's all this? And then of course I got interested, because the as well as the sort of poem, the other key thing that we have worked with all this time is this image. which is the spiral and the straight. And these are more elaborate images. And Penn, it's interesting, Penn, you yesterday when we went into the zoo and said, I felt it was a map. Right, and one of the things I got into, well, I started to explore this a bit really, and kind of got interested in the images, and then I went to one or two places where I know there are cup and ring marks, the Avebury being one of them, and I got interested in, because I'm interested in this idea of the kind of solid and the fluid, and there's a way in which these images, very ancient images, and it's interesting that the Malta thing's interesting because it's a similar time period, very, very early Neolithic images, where something is being depicted, something really mysterious, because nobody really knows what these things mean. But all I know is if I pay attention to them, both as an image and as if I go to actual stones where there are cup and ring marks, it really brings together this sense of the formed and the fluid and this sense of the deep interconnection of the universe somewhere. So there's a sense where you go right into the earth and go right into the stars simultaneously. And so I've been working, and the thing I liked about these images is nobody knows what they mean. Right, so even in like the poem, poem's got a lot of substance in it and ideas, and I can think, you know, quite a lot about that. But I can't, all I can do with these is just to kind of be with them and to really kind of get interested in them and to let them affect me and to almost kind of commune with them. And in a way, they are sort of, for me, functioning a bit like a living map where they're taking me somewhere. I don't know exactly where they're taking me, but they are taking me into depth. And then, let me just see, find it. And then I got sent, which I vaguely knew was happening, but I didn't know much about it. I got sent by Jeremy a pack of cards, which is called the Moon Oracle of the Shi, written by my good friend John Matthews, and a guy called Will Kingham. I'll just pass them around for you to have a little shift yet while I'm talking. And basically, there's a set of kind of images. So the images that you've been looking at just now are images that come out of that pack. But the pack itself comes out of images that are mostly from this stone and some other stones with cup and ring marks that John and Will looked at. And they're very beautiful images, and they're all about the moon shining on stone. That's why it's called the moon oracle. So it's a, in terms of this thing that we've been looking at this weekend, of, if you like, of moving from the brightly lit sun to the more mysterious sea and the moon and the stars. These are the images that really help us to go there. Now, they don't replace, you know, so these kind of images or any images don't replace the kind of, if you like, the pure practice, which is just coming in and descending, but they're great supportive kind of things. They're not as intensive in some ways, so because actually when you go into the senses and into the body and into the depth, you're working very directly with these energies of ascent and descent and resistance. But they are more like these, like bathyspheres, like the things that enable us to be at depth and can hold us. So they mediate a reality to us. They're not the main event, but like the other Shi cards or anything else that we work with, they help us to get somewhere. They are like portals, or they're helpful kind of devices. It's called the Moon Oracle of the Shi, and it's available from Lorien Press, in the same place that you got the other one from.
I suppose they keep our consciousness of the surface focused.
Yes.
On the particular image.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's right. So they mediate, right? So they're a tangible thing. They're an actual physical thing, first of all, right? So you can engage with them with your actual outer senses. As you come into resonance with them, they connect with your kind of with your deeper imaginal nature, and they themselves seem to have a capacity. They seem to have come out of the deep. So coming to this idea that when you go into this more imaginal place, nearness is caused by similarity. So these images, these strange images that you find all over the country, and seem to come out of a culture that had some understanding of the coming together of the fixed and the fluid. And so when you pay attention to them, when you relate to them, you find yourself in more easily in that deep kind of place, and creating relationship between the surface and the depth because of that. And I mean, the other reason that brought me today, of course, is because suddenly, you know, I don't every day have dreams like this every day. It was suddenly, you know, because it's in a way, what we're doing here for me is the cutting edge of my work, because we're really kind of exploring the edges. Now, I've all done a lot of work with me, so I'm looking at, okay, where's the next edge for me? And somewhere, you know, when you get a dream like that, you can't ignore it, because it's right, you know, suddenly. It's a 30-foot stone in the middle of your kitchen, you know, which is kind of, you know, and it was interesting to me that it was the kitchen, it's the work, I mean, the kitchen is the workhouse of the house in my way of understanding a house, and it's the place where, you know, it would be where the kitchen table is, so let's plonk it right down in the middle. It fills the space, so I have to pay attention to it. And then, of course, it's continued to come up in dreams and sort of, and then it, and...
And it's the place of nourishment.
And a place of nourishment, exactly, completely. A place of feeding, place of, you know, a place of the hearth. It's also the place of the hearth. It is the centre thing. It's the place of the hearth as well. And I, you know, so it really, and it's really about mysterious images, but also really about embodiment, that because it's this very solid stone, and of course that connects you. And then the thing that always also struck me about it, of course, it's a stone that's now buried in the earth. It's in its own place,
yeah.
Right? So it hasn't been moved. It's in its own place, and it's now deep in the earth, hidden, a mysterious thing, deep in the earth.
Like the
saint's grave hidden deep in the ground, exactly, right? So it's another, so that, and that bit of the poem really is the step on beyond the poem. So it's like, this is the saint, in a certain sense, this is the saint's grave hidden deep in the ground. This is something that opens another set of possibilities for us, you know, and it's, in a way, it's challenging as well, because unlike the kind of the Welsh or Irish poems, there's all we have is this. It's just an image. It's just an, and it's, but it was, these things are obviously very important to the people who did them, because you find them all over the country, and it's bloody hard with the tools they would have had in those days to create these images. It takes a hell of a lot of doing. You know, you're working with granite stone. They're very precise. That there's all kinds of different shapes and configurations.
Well, so they didn't have metal to make them.
Before metal, right? So they haven't got you could do that relatively easily with metal chisels and things, couldn't you? But you haven't. You're doing this with bits of stone and stone and antler picks. That's kind of what they're made from.
So the hardest thing you could find would be granite, which is what you're really trying to cut into anyway with that stone.
That's right.
It might have had some kind of other.
Well, we don't know. That's the whole point. No, we don't know. That's the mystery of it, right? That's the genuine mystery. This is something that they could have been something we don't know about at all to do it. You know, that there's so it's a power. It's a very powerful thing.
Heather, in Belfast, she came an Aboriginal woman called Heather Kamara or something.
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't going to go because I thought, oh, she's going to go on about missing children or something. And it's terrible. She was extraordinary, but she was also an artist. And she was just the most radiant, not quietly radiant, but she was explaining Aboriginal art. Well, she was a lot of it. And the things that looked abstract to us, I've always assumed that these are star maps.
Mm.
I'd have to say, but I just realised that they're not unsimilar, and they would be about families. They would be about family relationships and different people groups. And so I just kind of realised that they might not be stars. They might be people groups and families and the range like you said. It was amazing how all these things that looked to us like abstract shapes. They weren't.
You know,
they weren't
a bit, you know,
they were in between writing and out, but they all had
absolute
meaning.
Well,
meaning for them, absolutely, yeah.
Well, that is funny, which is the ringing stone I was looking at.
Yeah.
It's only got those, they had about 50 odd of those,
mm-hmm.
of the cup marks.
The cup marks, yeah.
But it didn't have any spirals on there, so
Yep.
It seems much more earlier, perhaps, or certainly less physical.
Well, we don't know, you see. We could say that, but there could be a really particular reason for that. We don't know. I mean, that's our immediate, that would be my immediate assumption as well.
Yeah.
But actually, there's a real sense of mystery about that. We don't know.
It could mean something completely different.
It could, exactly. And in a way, that's the usefulness of them, right? That actually,
yeah.
in the end, all you can do with these things is look at them and be with them and then see what happens. There's absolutely nothing for the mind to grab hold of here somewhere.
Yeah.
And obviously, our minds do grab hold. And try and make meaning.
Yeah.
All the cards that are going around are all the images from here, or is it
no,
from
other places as well? There's quite a number from there, and then they got interested in looking at other ring numbers. So you won't find them all on there. There's other places as well.
The Aboriginals, the circular painting, you know. The symbols are all circular, aren't they?
I don't know anything about it, really.
But I think they're actually maps of their land, the landscape that they're walking through. So the children were taught the maps of these countries, so they would know their way around. People walk the way around the other way. Without water, I mean, it's just really...
It could be musical notations.
When you say about the Russian one trying to grab meaning, can I say these are driving me crazy, because no way can I relate that to that.
Yeah, but that's because it's a tiny bit of it.
Yes, but I can't find it on there.
It is there.
Presumably because this is so big, it hasn't got everything on it.
No, that's right, yeah. It's massive, right? So if you imagine...
It's
upsetting
me.
Yes, I'm sure... If you imagine, that is a tiny weeny bit of it, right?
It's smaller than I can imagine.
It's much smaller than that, because it looks like it might be half of it or something, doesn't it? And no, that'll be a tiny weeny bit of it.
I found that really agitating.
Yes, that's right. So imagine something about 30 foot big, right?
Yeah.
And that being a tiny little bit, or a little edge of it somewhere.
Extraordinary.
Yeah.
Thank you. Has anything been written about it?
Hardly anything, no. I mean, Stirling University are going to produce, I've done a digital mapping thing on it last autumn, and they're going to produce a really good digital image of it. But what will come out about it is a digital image. There's lots of stuff written about the ring and cup marks, but all the books are descriptive books, right? Because nobody knows. So they just know they're old and clearly they're important. You find it a lot of it in Scotland and in the north of the country. That's where they're mostly found, Northumberland, Yorkshire, and Scotland. But they are found all over the country. But the greatest concentrations are up in the north. So nobody really knows anything about them, and so most of the books are mappings and pictures of them. You know so they're descriptive rather than explanatory.
And with the cards, is it just the cards, or do they come with a little
book? No, there's a little book. I've got the book with me, but no. All right, that's the deal. That's the book. Have a look at the book.
Thank you.
So these are the Jeremy cards that are coming out.
Jeremy's as a publisher, John Matthews.
Okay.
So they're produced by John.
Will's drawings.
They're Will Kingham's drawings, and designed by John Matthews, basically. So but Jeremy's published them, which is how I got to hear about them.
The way they're numbered, because there is no way you could have any descriptors or titles.
None at all. They're just numbered. And there's a little spiel by John about his account of it. But it's what really struck me was that I had drawn the exact shape of it. I mean, that was the sort of bizarre. And it was really one of those very odd things. I don't normally draw stuff in therapy, and I always get irritated when my therapist suggests things. I hate being told to do things in therapy, because I'm really resistant. And he said, "Why don't you draw it?" And I sort of, I'm in my usual, Gary suggesting Ian does something, and Ian never likes this face. But then I sort of breathed a bit and thought, maybe it would be a good idea. So I drew it. But anyway, if I hadn't drawn it, and it hadn't been so accurate, I'd have discounted it needed more, much more. But it was the fact that it's actually drawn the bloody thing, and it was the same shape, and exactly the same shape as that. And I didn't have all the images that are on there, but I had had enough of them, the of cup and ring marks, to know that actually it was the same thing.
Can I just ask, when you were drawing it, did you get any kind of sensation or any kind of bodily.
Yes, I did. It was like something really plunking down on me, right? So as I drew it, it was very strong, and as I said, I was resistant. But once I started drawing, I could not draw it, and it was very fast. The drawing was very fast and immediate. So there's a very immediate shape, and then I found myself doing this sort of ring marks, and then with the little tails going into them, very kind of intensely.
Just out of curiosity, did you get any sense of what you were doing? What you were explaining? Did you get any sense of?
It was like a map. It was like a map of the deep, right? So it was a feeling of putting down something that was like a set of directions. Is the best way I can put it, you know. So that this is how to get somewhere. I don't know where to exactly, but that's why I was stunned then when that came and sort of. And well, what was the other interesting thing about it, right? Which was a bit which is actually frustration as the name of the game around this thing, because my first thing is, I'll go and see it. And then I think, I can't go see it. It's buried deep in the earth. And then not only is it buried deep in the earth, but last autumn I could have gone to see it. Right? Because it was open, you could have gone to see it then. And I'm thinking, this is a bit of, this is a bit of bad timing, inner people. Why didn't you show it to me last time? I could have gone to visit it. And so there's something about this place of, it's hidden. There's something hidden, and you haven't got direct access to it, but you have to trust what happens. So around this, I don't have much sense of it, except I know I have to trust what happens. It's clearly important because it kept coming up in dreams. I'm sharing it with you because it feels important. And it kind of links to me, as we're in this place at the moment of kind of reviewing where we are and probably entering a new stage next autumn. Well, the other thing that's accompanying this, as well as the poem, as well as the basic practice, is this. This spiral straight diagram that we've come back to time and time again. And this is almost a sort of, I don't quite understand this yet, but this is almost like a development on from that. Right? There are more possibilities, more shapes here. This has got a very, in some ways this has become quite a known shape to me. And it's a bit like something has just gone that, opened a big door, and oh look, there's all these other shapes that you can look at.
But also the shapes are calling you.
Yes, totally.
Yeah, the stone is calling me,
and there's no, you know, there's kind of no way not to do it, and it's and it's calling me into the inside, into the depth, and I can't physically see it. Go and see it. Yes, it is, right? So it's affecting my consciousness very profoundly. I can't physically go and see it, and it's buried. And the fact it is buried deep in the earth, in its place, is quite strong for me somewhere. Yeah. It hasn't been moved. It hasn't been sort of dug up. It's not sitting in a museum, but it's also deep in the earth somewhere.
So can you rest it? Is that something like that's a very rested place then?
Yeah.
That's always been. Covered
and protected. That's right, exactly. So there's something quite peaceful, quite still, quite deep about it, right? It's actually in the deep. Mm. And it's deep in the earth, and yet, and when you go into the images and the feelings of it, it seems to take you into the stars as well. So it completely, and into the ocean. So it's got all of these kind of qualities somewhere.
In a way that it wouldn't have done, like, say, even 20 years ago, because now we look at them, or even that Newgrange thing, and we've seen the sort of three spiral galaxies sort of interacting and going.
Oh, that's right.
We wouldn't have seen those pictures from Hubble and Chandra, and now we're going, oh, these look strangely familiar. until recently, when we look up, we just see sort of stars and constellations.
Yeah, that's right.
But they wouldn't.
So do you think the Swapna stone will be the guiding spirit of the group next year?
Well, it's around, isn't it? I think it might be. I mean, I don't know yet, because we'll have to see what happens. But it's been a powerful thing that's emerged towards the end of this thing. And
can you tell us about? I think last time we met, you told us a story about having to draw it.
Yeah.
Duress. And then feeling really frustrated because you couldn't find out what it was about, watch the space. And so we've got chapter two.
Yeah.
That was incredible. I mean, they use this restrictive palette.
Yeah, I know.
And there's just one.
I know.
It's got red on.
Red on, I know, that's right.
It's absolutely bizarre, isn't
it? I know, it's strange.
And a completely different form, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes, I know, that's strange, that one, isn't it?
I think that was really inspirational that they actually buried it.
Sorry, what?
It was quite inspirational that they actually buried it.
Oh, I know, it was great. Amazing. Yeah, totally.
That's
the amazing thing, rather than, you know, think, right, let's dig it up and preserve it, or stick it under glass or something, or, you know, the various things they could have done.
Yeah.
I love the fact that they buried it again, you know, and the other thing...
It's very wise, it's because they're protecting it. It feels like, why are they another time.
Yes, that's right, exactly.
That's what it feels like.
Yeah, no, I think that's true. And I think there's something, but the other thing that's interesting is that they're creating the image of the stone. So they've done this powerful digital mapping thing. So what will be available whenever they get it together is a powerful, available image of the stone that's never been... And this stone has been buried. They haven't recently buried it. They had to unbury it. It's been buried for about 50 years. You know, so it's... And then they decided to unbury it in order to create a digital map of it. And now they've buried it again. So there's something very mysterious and powerful about that, in a way.
It also comes back to Becky's question about place.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
You know, they've created something.
Yes, exactly. So the thing, the image can the images we've seen. So the images, and even the images of things that are based upon the image of the stone, are quite powerful portals into things. So it's an interesting thing that they've done, I think, in both protecting it and then creating an image of the stone.
Yeah, I was asking John, what made you say note and sound? I was thinking exactly the same.
Because, a couple of things. This symbol here has always reminded me of a musical note.
A musical clef, yeah.
I don't know anything much about musical notation, so I have no idea the time.
Yeah.
It just strikes me as looks like it could be a musical reference.
Yeah.
But this map, why it occurs to me, it could be a map of where good acoustic places are. It's just that on the summer solstice, somebody posted a little video, 30, 40 seconds, of somewhere in Ireland, where they have these big horns, these big curved horns, four of them. Yeah, and they were blowing them. I can't remember the place, but they'd chosen to do that because they intuitively felt it would be a good sounding place. And that's... I just wondered whether acoustics were very important. It's just a wild guess.
Sure.
But it could be related to sound. A lot of ancient henges, stone circles, caves were selected for their acoustics, because we know that, because when you go to them and make sounds, it sounds wonderful. So there's something key to this about acoustics.
We miss out on music, how sound might have been used.
Well,
what Pauline said about finding music in the cities was really interesting. Being away in, if you hear a sound of a didgeridoo or something, that's such a
It says here, compulsive.
It says here you look upon the great turning stars that in your tongue is called way of milk, starry hope, that is Milky Way. The stones you see and touch are like the shadows of reality in the place where you walk, the stones sing. It is the great song of the universe. It brings us joy as we stand in the light of star and moon.
There's that thing about the celestial spheres, as above, so below. I just follow the connections that come to me. But if the stars sang, the stones probably sang. Because that was the connection made. The universe was sung into existence. Maybe that far back, it made total sense. But things came into existence, there was sound into existence. Stonehenge was sounded into its place, sung into its place. Mm. So these could be very crucial things. Okay, the Matthew's got that singing the soul back home, the song lines of places. Mm. It just seems an area to explore and go down into the depths and discover what we can access, how it resonates with us.
Do you know the Tibetan Om chant? Because that's the shamanic origin. Is that Om is supposed to be the sound of the birth of the universe. Mm.
So, and these circles could be a visual depiction. The depiction of Om.
I've got a CD of those. People made a replica of those horns because they were on the Gunnestruck cauldron.
Yes.
And I've got a CD of those horns and they sound amazing.
They do.
I like the limited use of the palette, actually.
Was that Andy?
I quite like the use of the... It's a very limited palette of colour. Mm.
Yeah. That's why the red struck me so forcibly.
Yeah, well, I like it. It feels,
I think the way that expresses stone as fluid is just...
That's amazing, isn't it? No, I know, that's really interesting. It's
just compulsive, it just keeps shifting.
Yeah, I know.
So what are you doing with them now, Ian? The images.
What am I doing? The first one,
I'm just interested
in
how that's kind of developed.
Well, I'm just following the image. I've only just received that, so I've only, I mean, that's getting it hot off the press in a sense, really. But what I have been doing is just being with the images and being with the images in the stone and listening to some of the images that came up in my dream, and they're taking me into this place of fluidity and solidity and kind of and it's like the because there's no concepts associated with it, taking me right into the body and right into a very felt sense of this territory that we're trying to look at today, right? So that how to put the places together, how to have the fluid and the solid together, and recognizing that you don't need much. Right, so I enjoy the muchness of the story sometimes, but actually, one of the things that it's showing me is you don't really need any of this. And you can have a stone and an image, and you can kind of just be in your senses, and then you can, right, not even understand anything about it, but that can take you somewhere. And so it's like you could strip all the rest of it away, and goes back to something very primal that nobody understands. And that'll take you, and the fact that there's something quite useful in that, because it takes you outside your conventional ways of thinking around Celtic-y, shamanic, Taliesin, dum-de-dum-de-da, takes you something into something much more primal, much more essentially human. Right, so it's like it strips a lot of stuff away and makes this deeper place more available to me. For me in particular, it's really useful to have my knowledge, because I know a lot. And it's really useful to have that all stripped away. And it takes my mind in unusual directions and takes my experience in unusual directions. So that's, you know, that's kind of what it's doing for me, I think. So
what you need to do, isn't it, is get an antler horn and start chipping away at the stone.
Yes, that's a
long... next year, then?
Yeah, you're all going to get a stone and an antler.
We've both on the same stone, haven't we? But the thing is, I remember that quote, I always prefer God to geometry, you know, and these things, they're pictograms, but they're not pictures.
No.
You know, so they're not abstract geometric concepts. They're shapes that imply story and relationship.
They're almost a bit like there's extraordinary sort of forms of life you see at the deepest part of the ocean.
Yeah, that's right.
They're almost like those sort of...
Yeah, that's the sort of thing they evoke, right? They evoke something so that they take you sort of into the stars or into the deep ocean or into cellular life as well. They take me also into the sounds of cell division and sperm and egg and all. So it's like they take me into the real primal roots of something. and without cultural references around that. So it takes, yeah. So there's something much deeper, right? So take me deeper. That's what I'm interested in a way.
I think they're the first cards I've seen that I might actually offer to a client to look at.
Yeah, no, they're probably, yeah.
Yeah, show clients. I wouldn't show clients the she cards.
Yeah.
Those, I think, oh yeah, I could see
offering
that and seeing
what comes up out of it, yeah,
totally. Yeah. Yeah. Mm. It's like pushing it something perfect because it is so specific, it is so clearly not decorative, it is so clearly,
yeah, totally.
Meditation.
Yeah.
It's something, but it so clearly is, it's not random, it's not definitely.
Oh, no, it's definitely not,
so
but no. There's some meaning, there's a meaning there for sure, but.
I just had a great idea there. There's a guy I liaise with online, I've never met him, who goes into strange places and plays sound through places because he likes to know what it ends up like.
Oh, yeah.
And I think it'd be quite interesting to show him some images and ask him if he could find a way to put sound
to the image. Yeah, it would be interesting, wouldn't it?
Interesting what they sound like.
What they sound like, no, it wouldn't be. Yeah.
There's also this sensory approach. For me, it was the tactile.
Yes, that's right. No, that's right.
Which gripped me.
Yeah, absolutely.
I could only understand it if I could touch it. Because, like, Braille, you know.
Yeah,
I was
that's
blind
right.
to the sense of it. If yeah. I could touch it and close my eyes, I would get more of a connection and understand it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So how would you create that?
I don't know. It's just the birth of an idea so far. It's an embryo.
Like it.
Well, actually, you did it because you touched the image.
Yeah.
Actually, it isn't that you have to find a stone and touch it. You actually touched the image. So that's what happened just there and then. Now, you might want to go on and to touch a stone if you find a stone or anything about. But actually, just by touching the image, something happened. So that's interesting, right? So that itself, just by touching the images, which is not a way we think of. We normally think of looking at image, right? So you don't normally think that touching an image would have a tangible effect, and yet it did. So that, you know, so there's something interesting in that.
The embodying.
Yeah. Yeah, totally.
Because the kitchen table is, I mean, this is a mental pen. This is, I mean, somebody in the poetry group said, wrote a poem about a family kitchen table, and she thinks that, like, the children get rid of it's been intergenerational, and she's sort of talking about every ring on it and every ring like that. And it's just.
Oh, yes, that's right. Yeah, that's quite funny.
Every ring's got its history.
Got its own history.
It's not made by copycats, but it's.
Yeah, yeah.
Rings on the kitchen table.
It certainly has its history, probably. Yeah, it will.
It's a mental
electric hob rings as well.
Yes.
Mm. Yeah, like that as well. Yes, like old-fashioned hobs. Yes, that's right. Yeah. Yeah, like that as well.
Okay. What I would really like, I don't know if this is the right time to mention this, but it's such a long while till our next. I would like something to work on. I mean, I know we can, but I was just wondering whether it could be something quite specific, but. That if we, you know, that we might work, I don't know whether it's possible or not, that we might work on individually and then bring and share next time.
That's
a good idea. I don't know if other people feel that. It's just about keeping the connection between us and the work, really.
What I would suggest you do is to, two things. One, to keep working with a central practice of dissent, right? So really just keep, you know, to really kind of explore that and coming into the senses, being with the surface, facing inwards and then dropping and then exploring that kind of process and in a way get really interested in the transition points in that process. So get interested when you bounce out, get interested when you fall asleep, get interested in what the experience of how far can I go down, what happens when I go down, so really, really track that. And really discover your relationships between the surface and the depth and what happens when I hold both. Does it make a difference when I do it in different places? And if I do it at home or if I do it out in the land? And really, and get very kind of, a really good thing to do is to get very simple about it, to be dropping down into the body, but maybe dropping down into the earth, into the house, into the particular place you are, and then allowing that, when that spreading out happens, notice what it's like in the atmosphere around you. Notice to kind of, okay, what am I touching into? What is this larger kind of field? Then come back, look at the relationship between the larger field and your personal field. So that's the kind of, you know, I suppose that would be the core practice to keep on working with over the next couple of months. But if the, and the other thing that you could do, just because it would is a, if you like, it's a cutting edge thing really, is to work with these few images that are given. You work with the clock, no stone, work with the other two images, and just in the way that we have been doing, just look at them, take them in, come out again, and just create, you know, discover your own relationship with these things. If you're near anywhere, do a little bit of research. If you're near anywhere with cup and ring marks, maybe go and see a cup and ring mark stone. Go and touch the stone. You know, so we find out about it. You know, it's a bit like research it a bit. Mm. Yeah. So those would be about two suggestions really about something that we could all easily do over the next couple of months till we meet again in September, and just see.
Sorry.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously, it's not what they thought. But I'm just saying, that's the stay. I know it reminds me of something. It's the way. It's a whale who's encountered a lot of squid. And it's like the sucker mark.
There could be a sucker mark. Yeah, that's quite funny.
It's survived a lot of journeys into the deep.
It has. It definitely has. Yeah.
Well, it's got an eye.
It does actually look a bit like a whale, actually, doesn't it, look at it from this angle? Yeah, I can see.
Well, it's by the sea, isn't it?
It's the
island. Is it by the coast?
It's on the edge of Glasgow. And Glasgow's down by the sea, so yeah. Yeah, it's just on the edge of a housing. I mean, it's interesting, you see, because it is clearly a very powerful place, but it's not a romantic place. It's on the edge of a Glasgow housing estate.
The people in the estate might have the same DNA as the guys who chipped the...
They might have. You don't know. You don't know.
Might have been beautiful.
Hmm?
Might have been very different. Might have been...
Oh, yeah. I imagine... Yeah, Glasgow's very big now, isn't it? So it would have been probably out in the wilds. I don't know. Mm. I mean, I don't really know the geography of Glasgow that well. But might well have been.
It's going near Iona, isn't it? That's good.
Yeah, south of Iona. It's a bit fair, but it's just been a little lower below Argyll, west coast.
Doing your own painting, photograph, drawing, whatever, your own symbol and form of these stones would be part of that. Mm-hmm. Activity to do over the next 3 months.
Yeah, I think so. Mm. Mm. Yeah, I mean, what you could do is just, you know, take the images as they've been given and look at them and be with them, and then just see where you feel led from that, and just and combine that with this core practice, really, which is, you know, the simple but powerful practice of coming into the senses and facing both ways, and then trusting the unfoldment of whatever happens there, and experiencing those kind of shifts of identity that happen as you descend. In some ways, the more we go into this, right, the simpler the work becomes, right, in some ways, because actually, obviously I don't know what's going to happen next year, we'll see what happens, but the direction is into something more primal, something simpler, so that we are dealing with something very essential rather than cultural. And obviously nothing wrong with the cultural stuff. I love all the Celtic things and they have a relationship with this, and I'm certain I still shall be talking about Taliesin and people. But we're looking at something right now anyway, and this weekend, when we come to this practice, you could do this practice all over the world. It has been done all over the world. It can be, you know, these forms that we're looking at now, you'd actually find these kind of forms all over the world. So we're looking at something that's essentially human, that's connected with, if you like, the star stuff of the universe, that's connected with cellular life, that's connected with something essentially archetypally human, and therefore has many possibilities of expression because of that. So it's like we're going beyond the cultural forms into the heart of something. That's the sort of intention. And then seeing what arises when we do that. And, you know, what can arise is all kinds of unusual possibilities once we break out of the box a bit, in a way. So that's part of the intention here. Right? And if anybody wants a really lovely light bit of summer reading, there's a wonderful novel. If you like, but you have to like fantasy type novels. It's kind of a realistic novel, but it's got a fantasy element. It's called a book called Last Call by a guy called Tim Powers. And it's all about the magic of Las Vegas and the magic of chance. And it's also about the mystery of the Fisher King. And a really wild take on the Arthurian tradition. Mm.
Who's
the
author?
Tim Powers. It's a great novel. Earthquake Weather.
In the Dark.
Yeah, that's right. Earthquake Weather is a follow-up to The Last Call. Anubis Gates on the Anubis Gates, that's right, yeah, he's got that as well. But,
summer reading.
Yeah.
Tim Gates, did you say?
No. Tim Powers.
Austin Powers.
Austin
Powers.
Bill Gates.
Bill Gates, different man altogether. Last Call.
Last Orders.
Okay, let's just sit together for a moment, just to come back into the body, away from the thoughts. Just simply back into our bodies, not going anywhere this time, just breathing halfway through this process now, and just done a lot of work this weekend. And we'll come back together in September and we'll see what we've all discovered.